everybody. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is Hashtag No Limits, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet that we know who we are, but not who we will be. I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. I give you a quick science lesson. The caterpillar dissolves into its cells, and just when it thinks life is over, it reforms into the butterfly. But it isn't finished struggling. It then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon for its wings to be strong enough to take it soaring all over the world wherever it's going to go. None of that can be easy, but it comes out in a beautiful way, and I think that we need to support and highlight and share people and their abilities more often than not. So today I have a wonderful guest. I was on her podcast, recently re-recorded it. I don't think it's actually out yet. And I'm so excited to be able to have another conversation with her because she is amazing. But before we get to Nina, I just want to remind you, if you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from. If you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. And make sure that you like and subscribe to this channel because you don't want to miss any of my amazing guests. So with all of that said, I'm going to bring Nina on. Welcome, Nina. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So I really don't do introductions of my guests. I let them tell my audience about themselves. So go ahead and give us an introduction of who you are.
Like that. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to speak better of you than you? Because you know you the best.
Well, I'm a mom, I am a wife, I'm a grandma, which is so fun. I'm a transformational life and business coach. I'm a chef, a speaker. I host my own podcast, which you were on, which is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. And I've been leading women for about 20 years. And I love what I do. And I love being in high pressure kitchens. And I love coaching. And that's all of me in like a quick nutshell. So it's been fun. It's been life to me is a fun journey. So I've been having a great time living.
Awesome. So tell me more about, I think you told me that you have ADHD. Is that correct?
I do. I have ADHD. You'll probably see it throughout this episode because I get wah, you know, so I didn't know that though. I didn't know that, Shelley. I ended up self-diagnosing, but also I had a professional on my show who was a professional in diagnosing for ADHD. And as we were talking and, you know, she was asking questions, I was, she was on my podcast, so we were talking. And then I was like, I think I have ADHD. I feel like I have all the signs. She goes, oh, no, you definitely have ADHD. I was like, I knew it. And because my son has ADHD and we're very similar. And I realized a lot of the things that I was doing, he was doing. And they diagnosed him with ADHD, but they never diagnosed me. So growing up as a child, I struggled a lot, not only with ADHD, but I have a little bit of dyslexia as well. So I flip my letters and numbers often. And so I normally have to write something, walk away from it, then come back, check it again, walk away from it. You know, it takes time to do the work that I do because I've learned the skills that I need to kind of be professional, you know, so every job I've had, I've always been professional. I write all my notes. I double check everything, but it's because I had to learn those skills because I was never taught differently. And growing up, I mean, I'm 52. That wasn't really a thing. You know, it wasn't really something that was talked about, not like it is today. But I, you know, yeah, I have ADHD all day.
So I'm really curious since you weren't diagnosed with it. And so therefore, you know, I'm guessing though in school you had difficulties. So what was school like for you?
School was very hard and I didn't like school I didn't like school because it was really hard. I remember in first grade, now this one was a story that actually affected me most of my life. So I was, I also have a lot of trauma in my life too, which I think plays a big part. And, you know, living with my mom for a little bit, trauma there. And then she would give me to my grandparents and I would live with them for like a year and then back to my mom and back to, so in middle, I mean, like elementary school, I don't know. I did different elementary schools like 4 or 5 times. In first grade, I did like in 2 different places because they kept bringing me back and forth. And I'll never forget my first grade teacher was trying to explain something to me and I couldn't get it. And I'm sorry. I'm like, I don't get it. And she's like explaining it again. I said, I don't get it. She goes, you know what? Are you stupid? And I said, I'm not stupid. And especially because she did it in front of other kids. And I was so embarrassed and angry. And I felt so like little worthless, right? Because you're only, 6 years old in first grade. That really affected me. I actually did first grade twice because I couldn't do it, right? And then I just, all my life, I struggled with, oh, you're so stupid. Oh, you're so stupid. You know what I mean? Like if I make a mistake or if I do something, oh, that's so dumb. You're so stupid. You know, and I think it's, you know, teachers have a big responsibility to not do something like that, right? And also to maybe, you know, look at what the student is possibly struggling with. And I know, like I said, it's a long time ago. So I'm sure back then it wasn't like all these diagnoses, you know, these teachers were up, you know, up on. I get it. But I think she should have been a little bit more patient with me, a little bit kinder. And I think she, you know, she never apologized for calling me stupid. And I never told anyone either because I felt stupid. You know, so I just never told anyone, but I still didn't get what she was trying to teach me either, which made me feel stupid. Isn't that something? Like, you know, you're not, you're just, your brain just doesn't compute that way. They have to show it to you a different way. I think it's important that we realize that a lot of us are struggling with things that maybe we never been diagnosed with.
Right. And I'm so appreciative. And I know that faith is a big part of your life as it is in mine. And I am so thankful to God that He has given me what He has given me as far as relating to students and understanding students, because I would never have even thought to say that to a child, because somewhere early on in my life, God gave me that wisdom to know that everybody can learn, but it's up to me and others to help find their path that they need to take. I had someone a few weeks ago and she was talking about dyslexia as well, and how, and her, she and I had not talked about this before, and her way of putting it was almost verbatim to how I would say it to my students, which is, many people's brains will take them from point A to point B and it's a straight shot. But a lot of people's brains will have to take a detour and they'll still get to where they're going, but their route is more scenic and it has more turns in it. And it might be, you know, that you hit some potholes along the way, but you're still going to get there.
Yeah. And you know, I made that mistake too. I mean, yeah. And I actually made that same mistake. I was a young mother, right? So I had my first son at 15 years old and I had my second son at 21. And my second son, after my divorce, he was about 5 years old. I was frustrated and, you know, a single mom and trying to make this happen and working 2 jobs and the whole thing. I'm not saying that to make an excuse. I'm just telling you a backstory. And then my son, I was trying to teach him something and he couldn't get it. And he couldn't get it. I'm like, oh, so stupid. And I didn't mean it, but it came out. And he looked at me, he goes, I'm not stupid. I said, no, you're not stupid. Oh, what a regret. I've regretted that all my life since the day I've said it, you know? And I've apologized to him. He's like, Mom, I honestly don't even remember you saying that. I'm like, yeah, but I did. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that hurt me at 6 years old. So who am I to have, you know, passed on that pain? And I wasn't calling him stupid. I'm like, oh, this is stupid. Or like, you know, like I was just saying it, but it was directed at what we were doing. So of course it was going to be personal. So we make mistakes. We all make mistakes, and we have to forgive ourselves for the mistakes and forgive those other people that did what they did. I forgave that teacher. I just feel like she just didn't know any better. And it just is. But for a long time, I didn't, because I didn't know. I just didn't feel worthy. Right. And, you know, I've learned that my brain does take a little bit longer to get from that point A to that point B. And I'm okay with that now. I wasn't then. But, you know, with the dyslexia and the ADHD and, you know, ADHD, you say things sometimes spontaneously, you don't mean it. Or your brain is rushing faster than your body can catch up. And so you can feel very defeated when you're a person who has ADHD, because you are trying to reach that thing that your brain is already at. You know, so my brain is already there, like 5 miles away. And now I feel defeated, like I can't catch up, if that makes any sense. Right. Does that make sense?
Well, it does to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, for a lot of people who are, that I've met, who are ADHD, a lot of them are entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they find it easier to work for themselves and go after their goals and go after things like that than to work for someone else, because you don't feel, you feel trapped a little bit. You know, you feel like there's a glass ceiling, and sometimes that can cause frustration, I think.
Yes. And I am so thankful that you brought that out about being an entrepreneur, because I teach about writing IEPs. And one of the things that I have tried to emphasize when I get to at the high school age, we start talking about what's life going to look like for this person after high school. And there's sections where the law has said, you know, you need to look at employment and think about that when you're thinking about what transition can look like. And so many schools are stuck in one, you know, like, oh, this is what employment looks like. And I have told them multiple times, because of doing this, I have met so many people who are entrepreneurs who also have an eligibility for special education, or had an eligibility for special education. And I think it's a lot to do with what you just said. And we have to get better at that understanding, like, they need to maybe take some classes towards how to run a business, or, you know, how to problem solve. Or, and honestly, I think a lot of my students who had specific learning disability eligibility, which is where the dyslexia would fall under, or that they had the other health impaired eligibility, which a lot of times people with ADHD or ADD will be eligible under that category. It's because you have had to find creative, different ways to problem solve and to get what you need for yourself. And so you're willing to try and not be successful, but try again and not be successful and try again until you find what works for you.
It's very, very true.
And so I think that plays a lot into that, being that risk taker and becoming an entrepreneur.
I think so too. I think you're making a good point. You know, my son, the one who has ADHD, is a music engineer, and he's worked for himself and has, you know, does his own studios and, you know, helps artists. And it's because I couldn't get this kid through school. It was so difficult. And when he became 18, he had 6 months left for school. The school made him sign a waiver that he was going to release himself from school, because they were, I guess, done with him. You know, he was on an IEP, and but he was 18, so there was no thing I can do to fight it. So he dropped out of school his very last year of high school, and I was disappointed, pissed off. I was all the things. And I didn't know what was going to come of it. You know, I didn't know what was going to become of him, right? Because to your point, entrepreneurship and business is not taught in school. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. But it's not. It used to be, but it's not anymore. And he just can't work for someone. He has tried and he's tried and he's tried and he's tried to no success. So working for himself, though, very successful, right? So I agree. I agree with what you're saying. And I love that you're helping people with IEPs, because I remember not knowing at all how to manage an IEP. I just shook my head with the teachers. Okay. Yep. Okay. Thank you. And what do we do next? Okay. Yep. I didn't know I could defend my son. I didn't know I could, you know, find a different way. I didn't know that, you know, I was never taught. It was just me alone in a room with a bunch of really big, scary people.
Yes. And I think that's part of what I teach too. And I think we need to really, as educators, as related service personnel, as our, you know, like our speech pathologist or occupational therapist, we really need to grasp what you just said, because I have added sort of a saying into, because meaningful participation is what parents are supposed to have in the development and implementation of the mm-hmm. IEP. And so again, the Lord gives me these great insights. And recently he said to me, give them this example. If I go to a movie and I'm interacting with the movie, you know, I'm laughing or I'm crying or I'm getting mad, or, you know, if I, you know, I'm, you know, whatever, if I'm making some kind of head knowledge nod that I'm interacting with that movie, sorry, kind of stumbling on my words here. I didn't have any implementation of that movie. And I certainly had no participation in developing that movie. But that is exactly what we do to parents at IEP mm-hmm. meetings. Mm-hmm. They'll mm-hmm. nod along. They might ask a question or two. They're interacting, but they're not meaningfully participating. They're not having input. Their input is not being valued or respected.
Right.
And so I'm trying again to get teachers to understand that, because even with each other, you know, like an occupational therapist will give their part, but no other expert at the meeting says anything to them other than the parent expert. And then, you know, the physical therapist will give theirs, and then the teacher will say theirs. And it's like, guys, we're not collaborating on goals. We're not collaborating on accommodations. We're just saying, oh, well, these are what this expert recommends. These are what this expert recommends. And we hardly ever speak up, all of us, about anything.
Right.
But yet we walk out of those meetings, and every IEP team that I've ever been involved with, and including my own, well, yeah, we all had meaningful participation. I don't feel that that's true if we're not trying to collaborate and we're not mm-hmm. listening and giving input into every area.
It's true. And the parent, you know, being on that side of the table, we just don't understand it. We just don't, you know, like I mean, I wish I could say, yeah, I fought for everything and I made sure. I didn't know how. I did ask questions like, well, does that mean he has an extra teacher in the class that'll help him? Does that mean he's going to have extra time on his exams when he takes them? You know, that kind of stuff. But I didn't know all that would be available to him, to help him through that. I had no idea. Right. And it's kind of like, if you feel like you're almost in a courtroom, it almost feels legal, like very legal. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of us don't understand legal jargon unless you're in the legal field. And that's what it felt like to me. Like I didn't want to be, what's the word? Stupid. I didn't want to be stupid. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to sit in there and ask a stupid question. Now I know better because I'm older, right? You get older, you know better, you get wise. But at the time, I just didn't want to feel like a stupid person in a room, because I'm a young Latina mother, right? With a kid who has special needs, or, you know, has ADHD. What do I do with this? Right. That's really how I felt. And I'm sure that a lot of parents feel like that. Like, well, I don't want to say anything stupid, or I don't want to be dumb. You know, and it feels that way. And sometimes when people are just talking at you instead of, you know, to you, that's a very different thing.
Yes. And unfortunately, now as an advocate, when I go into these schools, I come out of them most of the time with the same impression. Mm. The exception is when the team is very collaborative.
That must
and
be
that
nice.
Is very sad to me. Yeah. That, you know, I forget, and I'll have parents, you know, and it'll be their first meeting, and they'll be like, oh, you know, like that seemed kind of tense. I'm like, but they listened to you, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. You had input, they actually heard what you had to say and discussed it and tried to figure out if that could, you know, if that was needed, if it could work. And, you know, if maybe not the exact way you suggested, maybe it could be this way. And that's the exception to the rule. And it shouldn't be that way in my thinking. And I don't think that's the way the law intended it to be when it was written either. I think it says it multiple times, you know, you all are members of a team. And if you're members of a team, you're all participating mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and you're all working toward the good of a goal. And the right. and the good of the goal of an IEP is to help that child be the best version of themselves they can be.
You know, I guess, you know, playing devil's advocate or teacher's defense, they probably do so many of these, you know, so that at first when it becomes, let me help this child, after a while, it's like, let's just get through another meeting because I'm done with these meetings. Right. I mean, yeah. I think because yeah. I know yeah. some teachers and I think they're amazing. And I think that that's what happens. Right. But then there's this dual thing happening where the parent feels isolated and a little bit like, I don't know what they're talking about. It's all legal jargon. What do I do here? And then the teachers and the principals are probably like, we just get through this. We got another five more to go. You know, right. So I guess it's both, right? And so something's missing there. I love what you're doing. I love it. I wish I had someone like you when I was doing this.
Well, I love doing it and I love going in and, you know, putting the child first and yeah. saying, yeah, I'm, and as far as what you mentioned about, you know, dumb questions, I try to tell families, but it's not somebody telling them, it's them believing it. Yeah. There are no dumb questions. Even yeah. myself, having been an educator for as long as I was and continuing, you know, in the way that I am now, when I go into schools, sometimes districts will use acronyms that a different district hasn't used. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so I don't know what that means. And so I'll stop. I'm sorry. Can you tell me? I don't know what that means, you know? And so it's okay. And it should be okay. And I so mm-hmm. appreciate those teams out because they are out there. Those teams that are open to that. They are open to, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so used to saying that. I didn't realize I do it. You know, it's part of my vernacular. And you were also right about, it feels like a courtroom. It is a legal document.
Right. And right.
So it should, we all should be worried about getting it done correctly, appropriately. But you know, that's for another day. I kind of have drifted away from talking about you specifically. We're talking about IEPs and I don't mean to do that. So let's go back to you. So with the ADHD, what is it like being a chef? Because to me, when I see like a chef in a restaurant or on the TV shows or whatever, it seems so demanding and stressful.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. It's exactly how it is. It is demanding and stressful. It is really demanding and stressful. And it's also super fun. And you get to be creative, especially if you're in a kitchen that allows that for you to be creative. But I love that. I love the satisfaction of starting something from scratch and doing my mise en place and getting everything together and then creating this amazing meal, whatever the meal is. I've lived on my whole life with ADHD, but I think it helps me. And I think it's my superpower. It helps me to really just visualize the entire thing. It helps me navigate things quickly. I work really, really well under pressure and under like strenuous things and a lot of things coming at you at once. I work so well in that environment. And I think it's the ADHD that does that, that gives me that perspective. So being a chef, I think, well, first of all, I think it was my calling because I wanted to do that since I was a little girl. But I think that it is just something that I find that a lot of people in the creative space, whether it's in art or culinary or music or whatever, they all have some touch of ADHD. It's very interesting that's the way our brain works. Have you ever noticed that yourself?
As you said that, I started thinking about it. And yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. Cause we used to always say in the kitchen, you gotta be a little bit cray cray to be in the kitchen. Right. And so, the funny thing is we were all a little cray cray. But we also all had very similar ways of doing things. Like I was like, do you have ADHD? Yeah. Oh man, me too. You know, like that type of thing, because you can tell, like maybe somebody else would look at it and be like, oh my God, they're frantic, but we're not. It's dancing. You know, we're like, we know this goes here, this goes there, boom, 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 and it's shit. And we go to take our stuff out and we do this and we cut and we're slicing, we're putting it together. It's like a dance, you know, and not everybody can work under that pressure, and, right. you know, and still create a good product. you know, but it's been an amazing ride. I love what I do. And right now, in fact, right before we got on, that's what I was doing. I was teaching kids because in the summer I teach kids cooking classes and it was so much fun. So that's what I was doing today. And same thing. We were just dancing around the kitchen, trying to get things done. I had the music playing. We had the, you know, making tacos and all this other stuff. So it was really, really fun. Yeah.
I love how you worded that, that it's like dancing.
Yeah.
And when I think about people with ADHD, I do think it's a superpower. And I think mm-hmm. that somebody with ADHD is a great multitasker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what cooking is. Cooking yeah. stresses me out and I don't necessarily find enjoyment in it. but my husband, and he's never been diagnosed. I'm not insinuating that he has ADHD, but he's a great cook. And our daughter too, and because she learned from him, like how, mm-hmm. And then did, I think some people just have that innate quality of mm-hmm. being able to, like you said, like you see all these different ingredients and you can picture that as a masterful, beautiful yeah. dish or dishes. And that's I so look fun. At those few ingredients and go, I don't know what to do with all of these. How do I, you know,
that's so good. Yeah.
And so that cooking is definitely not my thing, but you throw something about education and an IEP at me, I'm golden.
Exactly.
You throw that at right. my husband or my daughter and they're like, whoa, uh-uh.
Right. Because I mean, that's where your brain works, right? Like you're looking at IEPs, you're probably reading the entire thing and how everything is structured and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just like,
yeah,
give me the cliff notes, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, like, yeah. Yeah. An IEP so is very analytical, very data driven,
right?
Very
right. White,
where so I live more in that left side of my brain, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where I think a lot of people with ADHD and some other disabilities live in the right side. So you're the right brained people. You're the only yeah. ones in your right brain.
yeah, I think we're all over the place. We're all over the brain. We right. are everywhere. Everywhere. It's so funny, but you know, it's very interesting because I do believe it's a superpower too. And I believe that if you don't control it or try to understand where your brain is going, you can also get overwhelmed because you become a multitasker, you end up overtasking. Right. I mean, you end up burning out. You end up taking on too many things. I know that I've done that. And so there's many, many times where I've had to put boundaries on myself where I've said, no, Nina, we're not doing that. We're stopping here. You know, I also have to do like Pomodoro techniques. I have to time myself when I'm doing different tasks. Because if I don't have some sort of boundaries around my mind and where my mind is going, then it gets over. I get overwhelmed, burnt out, exhausted, defeated, all the things, right? So it is a superpower and something you got to control. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That just kind of makes me think of my husband and daughter are big Marvel fans. So it makes mm-hmm. me think of, you know, the Avengers and how yeah. they were all had these different superpowers, but like the Hulk, if he didn't control his,
right.
it was destructive. To him right. and to others. And exactly. once he was able to control it, it was helpful. And it was not just helpful, but incredibly helpful. And that's kind of the concept of why I do hashtag no limits is that instead of looking at somebody who may have, should have been, or was eligible for special education in school as a problem, as a less than person,
mm-hmm.
we need to help them embrace who they are so that we can use their superpowers
100%. For all of us,
but absolutely for themselves.
100%. I don't know. Have you ever heard of John's Crazy Socks?
Yes.
Okay.
He was one of my guests.
Me yes. too. Oh my God. I love him. So it just made me think about when you said, you know, it doesn't matter if they have had or do or whatever and need a special education. I had him on the show and I was thinking he has Down syndrome and has grown an amazing business with his dad.
Yes.
Amazing. So John's Crazy Socks is amazing. And I'm like, so there is no limit. There really isn't. It's just about how we can structure that life around that individual so that they can thrive. All of us can thrive. All of us can thrive. I had a guest on my show. She has a condition, I forgot the name of it, where her bones break. So she never grew because her bones kept breaking as a child. And so even though she's an, a child, she's the body, she has the size of a child. And so she doesn't walk or anything because she breaks her bones all the time. And, but she lays down sideways and is a phenomenal artist and sells art. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Because her parents found that she loved to draw. And so they started to bring her markers and pens and papers and whatever. And she would lie on one side and she would draw. And now she's in art galleries and all kinds of amazing things. And, you know, we have to stop putting limits on people with our own biases, right? We can't just keep looking at people and making our own bias about what they can and cannot do. We can look at that person and go, wow, I wonder how they do what they do. Like I have a friend of mine, her name is Rosie. She's an amazing artist, no arms, born with no arms, has three children. Okay. And is a stay-at-home mom. Okay. Okay.
Wow.
So she took care of all three kids, changing diapers, changing clothing, bathing and everything with her feet. Okay. Mm-hmm. And does amazing art. She's a Christian. So she does amazing Christian art. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. This woman. And she does it with her feet. She has no arms.
Yeah.
So
I grew up with a guy. He lived a couple towns over, but we were both in the same denomination and our schools would compete against each other. And so I would see him on a regular basis, also born with no arms. He drives. He has become a motivational speaker. He's been all over the world. He eats. He does everything, like you said, like Rosie, with his feet.
Right.
And also a Christian. He's gone around with Zig Ziglar for years.
Amazing.
So it's because of their parents first and foremost.
Yep.
And their parents not going, oh, you poor thing, you'll never be blah, 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 blah. No, it was, huh, okay, well, you're going to struggle, but we're going to figure this out.
I love it.
And that's, we've gotten, I think, into our society that struggling is bad.
Yeah.
And if we have to struggle, we shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
So again, kind of why I use the caterpillar and the butterfly, because struggles give us character.
It sure does.
I mean, we can also shrivel up under a struggle and never come out of that struggle. But when we can push through, beautiful things can happen.
Yeah. You know, I think we forget that life will always take you back to homeostasis. It's going to always keep you in a place of balance, right? So that's why we have good days and bad days, good emotions, bad emotions, ups and downs, because it's supposed to be like that. And I don't know where we have gotten in this world where people think that you're supposed to be all good all the time, you know? Right. And then when you're not good, then all of a sudden the whole world is collapsing and everything's coming to an end. And, you know, it almost feels like danger is coming if you are struggling or going through something. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. It's a part of life. It's a part of, you know, living another day, because you never know what's going to happen that day. And I think if we can get to the point where we go, well, this is life. Life is amazing and challenging, and that's all a part of it. And if we can just get ourselves there, as opposed to, it's either all very good all the time or just really, really bad. Right?
Yeah. We have to get out of the Chicken Little mindset.
Yeah. That's perfect. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's because of, I mean, not to, you know, come down on like social media and stuff like that, but I believe a lot of it has to do with that, because we're getting only one-sided or one-shot deals in our scrolling, and everybody looks amazing and perfect for that one shot, you know? Yeah. And so there's a lot of stuff being poured onto us. And even as coaches, right? Oh, you can, you know, 20K months and you're going to be amazing and da, 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 da. And you go to all of these webinars and seminars and videos and group coaching programs and everything else. And then when life hits you that you realize, oh, this is a business and I actually have to work. And I actually have to, it's actually going to take me time. It's not going to happen in a day. Right. Damn. That's not what they said on that YouTube video. You know?
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Life is about that. Yeah. If we could just set people up to understand that life is a balance, I think we would all less be depressed and realize that it's just a part of life and we just have to go through it and support each other as best as possible.
Yeah, I agree. So going back to your school days and that first grade teacher saying that to you, hopefully you had teachers that did have more empathy and helped you kind of overcome, even though they didn't know and you didn't know. Can you talk a little bit about a teacher that was that for you?
I can't remember her name right now. I'm trying to remember. As you said that, I do remember her face, but I can't remember her name. And she was in high school. And I think I mentioned to you earlier how I had my son at 15 years old. So I was going into ninth grade with a son and working two jobs to take care of him. And I was in a very horrific domestic violence relationship as well. So it was a lot of stuff I was going through and I shouldn't have been going through it so young, but I was. And school was just not the thing for me because first of all, it takes me hours to read when it takes somebody seconds, right? Because of my dyslexia and my mind, it just takes me too long. So anyway, I almost flunked out of high school. And this teacher was like, I don't know why you're not applying yourself like you should be. I told her, I said, I have a son, I have two jobs, I almost got murdered, you know, because my son's father almost killed me, all that kind of stuff. And she's like, I'm going to push you because I think you can do this. And if you get all of your assignments done by the end, I mean, I don't care if it's the day of graduation, if you get all of your assignments in, I'm going to pass you and you're going to be able to walk, right? In graduation. I busted my tail. Like I busted my tail and I worked so hard. Miss Walker, I think that was her name. And I worked so hard. And I just remember the day of graduation, I still didn't know if I was going to be able to walk, if I was going to pass or if I had to do summer school. I wasn't sure. And she looked at me and she was like, I'm very proud of you. You did it. You are actually graduating. You can do anything you put your mind to. You got it. You did it. You know, and that was such a wow, what a moment for me because I was able to have my little boy, you know, recognize that you can do all things and even in the midst of adversity, you know, so that was a good thing. And also in college, like I didn't go to college till I was 30 because I had two kids and I had to work and take care of them. And both of my boys were at my graduation because I passed with a 4.25 and I was valedictorian of the school. And so I was able to have both of my boys there as an adult and have a high GPA, be the valedictorian. And I was able to like seal it because I knew God had my back on that. You know, that's a whole story. But I also realized I'm not stupid. I'm not stupid. You know, like that was like a validation moment for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is the limits that people have, like you said, their biases in their minds of, well, this person and for me, for my podcast, it's about the disabilities, but this really pertains to any difference. If anybody is different than me, my thinking about what they're going to be able to accomplish in life is here instead of maybe here, whatever's realistic for that person. And when we have low expectations for people, guess what? They meet those expectations. When we have higher expectations, guess what? They almost always meet the higher expectation too.
Yeah. And we have to be careful how we show up, right, Shelley? Because sometimes we show up with biases that we don't even know we have.
Yep.
Right? Or expectations. Like, I'll give you a quick example. I was working for this amazing organization, and they were really big on, what's it called? DEI, DEI, right? And which I kind of have a love-hate relationship with, right? But anyway, I went to college. I got my bachelor's degree. I earned my stripes, you know, went to did all the things, right? And I remember this woman coming to me and she goes, I just found out that you, and she's talking to me slowly, like I'm an idiot. Like, I just found out that you got this manager's position. You must be so elated. Like, weren't you shocked and surprised and amazed? Like, that's amazing. That's, I mean, you should be so grateful. Like all of these things, right? And I'm just looking at her like, what's she thinking? Okay. So I'm letting her go on, you know? And, and I'm just like, I have to ask you a question. She's like, yeah. I said, I'm just wondering if you're shocked, amazed, and surprised. Is it because I'm a woman or because I'm a Hispanic woman? Which one exactly are you shocked, amazed, and surprised about? Because I actually have a 4.25 GPA. I've graduated with honors. I've, you know, got my bachelor's degree. I've been in the restaurant business for about 15 years. Like, I'm just trying to wonder, like, which one is the shock, amazed, and surprise? And she's like, Nina, and then she walked away. So I say all that to say, like, we really
going to leave now.
Yeah. Like, we have to be careful about how we just have these biases about people. Like, I remember somebody didn't know English. We were at a store and this woman's trying to explain things to her in English, but she's talking to her slow and loud.
Yes, somehow that makes the translation work. I honestly probably have done that in my lifetime. I'm not going to lie. But oh now that God. I'm like,
yes,
be aware, yes, exactly what yes. you said, like, that's not going to help, you know. And now
it just
I do.
Made
I
me think of that when you said differences, yeah. right? You just made me think of the when you said that we have to be careful with our differences and how we right. think about people, because you know she's yelling and talking loud, and I said, excuse me, ma'am. She doesn't know English. She's not an idiot. She just doesn't know English. Like,
and she's not like, deaf.
And she's like, I'm like, you're yelling at her like she's deaf and you're talking to her slow like she's stupid. Like, she just doesn't understand English. So I'll just translate. And she's like, oh my God, I feel so stupid right now.
Right?
I'm like, good. I want you to be aware that that's what you're doing. Yeah. It's not on purpose. I don't think you're being mean. You know, it's just that we have to be aware too. You know, I had a friend of mine that was many moons ago, but in a wheelchair. Do you think I treated them like they were any different? No. You know what I'm saying? They were when we were growing up in we were in the projects and they were in a wheelchair. Nope. You still play basketball. You want to play basketball? Let's go. You want to go hang out? Let's go hang out. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we just didn't see the chair anymore, right. you know? Right. And I think that that's what we have to do when we're talking about people's differences, learning disabilities, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people have been on hashtag no limits and they outside have an invisible disability. So people treat them a certain way when they come up to them, but then that person starts to talk and maybe they're deaf or, you know, they have a speech impediment or, you know, just they don't quite get it. And then people, they slow down their speech. Mm-hmm. You know, some talk quieter, some talk louder. I have a friend who she had a stroke and has had several concussions, and she now uses a wheelchair to get around. Mm. And I mean, she has like 2 college degrees and, you know, whatever, just really, you know, shown that she is obviously intelligent. But now when she gets around in her wheelchair, people talk to her as if her intelligence is much lower. She's like, or even worse, they don't talk to her at all. Like, I've gone with her, taken her places, and people will talk to me instead of directing the conversation to something? Her. I'm like, she's right there. Talk to
what
her.
What is that? I don't know what that is, but we have definitely got to grow up. We have got to do better. We've got to do better. You know, it's like that first grade teacher who called me stupid. We have got to do better than that. You know, I understand she was frustrated, but do better. You know, and I'm not the only one. I've talked to a lot of people whose teachers have done not very nice things. You know, I mean, I know they're human, but you took on this job. Nobody gave it to you. You took it on. So, you know, don't do it if you don't want to do it.
Right. And I'm with you. You know, teachers are stressed. Teachers, and especially our gen ed teachers, I have realized in the last 5 or 6 years, how little training we give general education teachers regarding special education and how to teach and different and all of that. But yet the law says if that IEP team says you deserve to be in the general education classroom, that's where you're going to be.
Yeah.
And so I do think that a lot of our teachers, and whether they recognize that this is what it is or not, is they're fearful. Like, I'm going to fail with this kid, or I'm going to fail this kid by not being able to give them what they need. And so it comes back and it comes out as if, you know, because they're kind of trying to deflect. Like, what are you, stupid? And I think, honestly, she was probably thinking, what am I, how else can I teach this kid?
How
else can I try this strategy? How, you know, and feeling herself like she didn't have all the answers, which she didn't, and nobody can, but yet it comes out in a bad way.
It does.
And it, and
we fail teachers in that area though. We really should be giving them a lot of more training in that special education place. We really, really should. It's just like when you said that, I think about doctors too, how they only get like, I think it's 3 weeks of nutrition or something like that, or a week of nutrition, something ridiculous. And it's like, it's the same thing. Like the doctors keep giving you medication because that's all they know to do, because that's what they were trained to do. When a lot of times you can heal from natural things. You know, I think it's the same thing. Like we fail in one area, like we try to have this happen, but then we fail in an area that's important. Because teachers are important. Almost all our kids go to school. It's not a bigger population of kids that stay home for homeschool, you know? So these teachers are stressed. I was talking to a teacher recently and she was telling me like she had her largest class was like 35 kids. And I'm like, 35 kids? I said, well, you and your assistant, right? She's like, no, just me. 35 kids per one person? That's a lot. That's a lot of kids. And I think that needs to change.
Oh, I do too. Absolutely. I think we're trying to solve all the world's problems today. What do you think?
I think so. I think so too. Let's do it. You and I can just definitely solve some problems here.
Well, I mean, we've got about 10, 12 minutes left in our episode. And I want to talk about Straight Talk, No Sugar Added, but I also want to talk about what you do as a coach and how you are empowering women today. So while we're talking about those things, would you like me to bring up your website, or are you good without having your website pulled up?
It's up to you. You can pull a website up if you want. It's up to you. You don't have to. It's whatever you want. I'm so open. Yeah, I'm so open to anything. So my coaching business, it is really helping women transform. And what I want them to understand is that they're all born with a purpose. And we all have like these giftings and purposes and stuff in our life. And we should be utilizing that to impact the world. And I don't think everybody has to be an entrepreneur, but those who want to be an entrepreneur and want to build a business to transform what they know, their knowledge, their wisdom, all of that kind of stuff into a service-based business, then I want to help you do that. That's what I do. And so if you're a purpose-driven woman and you really want to impact the world with your knowledge and your skill sets and all of that stuff, then you can hit me up. And so if you go on my website, which she's putting up right now, just ninaperez.com, Nina is spelled N-E-E-N-A for those who are listening. You can go on there. You can connect with me. There's also a quiz that I have. It's called a purpose-driven quiz. And basically that quiz just asks like 20 questions and it's faith-based. So there will be some questions about faith and business and all that stuff. And that's just to show you, hey, maybe you're a strategist, maybe you're, you know, a different type of leader, things like that. So if you're that, you know, type of woman that really feels like there's more in life, but you're feeling stuck and you're in your own way, that's what I do. I have, you know, I go through some stuff in my academy where you will go through some toxic shame, some belief systems, you know, dealing with some of your emotions, how you really feel, getting from point A to point B, all of that stuff. And then after we do all of the things, to build your core, values and your curriculum and all of that kind of stuff, if you want, I have an entire segment of my team that comes and now helps you with funnel building, landing pages, ad spend, all of that kind of stuff. So really women come to me from concept to launch. I help them from what they think they want to do and how they want to present all the way through to launching their full business. And it's been an honor and a privilege for all of the women that I have worked with and the transformation that I have seen in their life. And it's because the reason I started this, Shelly, is because for a very long time, I just felt very lost and alone. And I didn't have anybody to kind of call on to help me. And what I realized is I was paying thousands of dollars for different coaches. And I, even at, when we were done with the program, I couldn't reach out to them anymore because they wouldn't answer any more questions unless I paid again. And I'm dang, this is hard because I have a question on X, you know? And a lot of times, yes, okay, you can go and Google it and you can go and go on YouTube, but there's something different about being with a human being who can listen to what you're going through and help you through the obstacles, right? And so, you know, that's how Wisdom to Wealth came about. And that's how Purpose by Design is here now. That one is a new cohort. It's starting in September. And that's going to be 90 days, full impact. Every week we're going to meet and we're going to talk about who you are, what you feel God has purposed you to do, and then create what it is you want to create. So that way you have a business that aligns with your values. So a lot of the women that'll work with me are going to be women of faith, I think. There's a couple of women who say they're not Christians, but believe in God and still want to be a part of it. I told them, understand that I'm a Christian. So I am going to speak about the Bible. I am going to speak about Christ. And if you're not offended, you're going to get a lot out of it, but I'm just letting you know. You know, I'm actually doing it as a super low price. And the reason is because I want to really help these women transform their lives. It's my first cohort with this 90-day format. And so it's only going to be $47 a month for the 3 months, $47 a month. You come in and we're going to get you going. We're going to get you from concept of what it is you want, the purpose that you're supposed to do, how you want to do that. And then let's get you out there. That's what we're going to do. 90 days, crushing it. That's how I want to do it.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. And for everyone who visits your website, but I just want to emphasize it here right now that for my audience, again, if you go to Nina's website and it was there, let me pull it back up again. Go back up there. There we go. It says free ebook to, I can't read it. I need to go to that page.
elevate your wisdom to wealth.
Free ebook to create your coaching business. So you can absolutely go to that website. It's up on the screen now. It is shop.ninaperez.com/p/wisdom-ebook. And you can get that from her as well. And then if you want more information, it's info@ninaperez.com. And she's everywhere. Everywhere that books are sold. No, wait, everywhere that social media is, I should say, because she's at YouTube, at Straight Sugar No Added. She is on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just type in Nina Perez and you'll find her in both of those places. Instagram, both Straight Talk No Sugar Added and Nina Perez, you'll be able to find her. And on TikTok at Straight Talk No Sugar Added. Yeah. So I think that's pretty much all the social media platforms that I'm aware of. I think there are, there's probably others.
There's so more. There's so much more like Alignable. Yeah. There's too many.
And I don't know what all the things are anymore, but yeah. Well, Nina, this, as I said in the beginning, I think, you know, you and I could talk for hours and I mean, I think we really could solve the world's problems. It'd just probably be.
If people listen, Shelly,
Yes. I know. I can solve the world's problems, but nobody ever asks
me. Right. Nobody ever pays attention. What is wrong with people? I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having me. And for those of you who are listening and watching, you know, I've listened to a couple of your episodes already, Shelly. You have really good guests and really good insight in what you do. And so people, you guys have to support. And the way to support is super simple. Just like, share, subscribe, like all the things, right? right? Because we need to spread good people out there. And when there are people who are showing up every day and bringing people on and giving you all this great information, support them. And that's the easiest way to support them. You know, you can also send her a $1 million check if you'd like. That would be amazing.
I'm open.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
She's completely open. Send her that check.
Yeah.
But, you know, really like, share, subscribe, click that button, like grow the audience. And that's how we get podcasters and people who are out here doing good things to actually put things out in the world. So thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That was that. I don't even have to do my outro now because you just kind of did it all right there. But yeah, guys, I mean, I'm going to reverse that and say to do the same thing. No straight talk, no sugar added. I had such a great time when I was a guest.
You.
And same thing, you know, your show is fantastic and you are bringing lots of great information out there and your guests are interesting and I'm on episode 200. You're on episode 500, I think,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Something
540, something. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah. So we've been around for a while. That's kind of how you get to have so many episodes type things.
Yeah. You got to start with one though. You got to start with one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, everyone in the audience watching live and in the replay, thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure, as Nina said, you like and subscribe and you share this because this show really isn't about me. It's got my name on it, but it's really about my guests. So if that's the other thing, if you know somebody that you feel you would that they would have a great story to tell. Whoops, I did that wrong. I meant to bring me up, not Nina. technology
is
great.
Am I supposed to say something? I don't know.
Yeah. Whoops. But yeah, if you know somebody who wants to be a guest, be sure and let them know about me and have them reach out to me because I'm always looking for guests. I want to continue to do this as long as possible to continue to change the world's perspective about not judging somebody's limitations, a potential by putting limitations on them. I know I'm getting all tongue-tied today, but the idea is really there that we know who we are, but not who we will be. With that, I will see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.